Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the House Commerce Committee, Monday, April 27th, 2020. I will call the meeting to order, and we will establish a quorum via roll call. I'm going to ask Simon Brown, our committee legislative assistant, to call the roll to verify the public members that are on the call. Simon?
Great. Representative Halverson?
Here.
Representative Stevenson?
Here.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Here.
Representative Carlson?
Here.
Representative Davids?
Here.
Representative Dean? Representative Elkins? Representative Garofalo?
Here.
Representative Haley?
Here.
Representative Howard?
Here.
Representative Cotiza Watoon?
Here.
Representative Crenshaw?
Here.
Representative Lesh? Representative Lislegard?
Here.
Representative Mahoney? Representative O'Neill?
Here.
Representative Richardson?
Here.
Representative Swazinski?
Here.
Representative Tabke?
Here.
And Representative Tice?
Here.
Okay, we have 16 members present. Representatives Dean, Elkins, Lesh, and Mahoney did not respond to the roll call.
Thank you, Simon. So we have a quorum present, and I know that there were members who had other committees to attend to, so they may come in later. First item of business is to see if we can, or the next item of business is to see if we can move approval of minutes from April 16th. Is there a member who has gotten to take a look at the minutes and would like to move the approval?
Madam Chair.
Representative Stevenson?
I've had a chance to review the minutes and would move their approval.
Representative Stevenson moves adoption of the minutes from April 16th, 2020. Is there any discussion to that motion? And I'll give us a moment if we, do we need to unmute everybody there, Travis? Seeing no discussion to, or hearing no discussion to the motion, we can vote via voice vote for the approval. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. Moving forward, the plan is to conduct our votes in committee today via voice vote, and similar to if we were meeting in person, and I will use my ears to make the decision about the motion passages. If members would like to request a roll call, please do so, and just seek to be recognized by raising your hand, and we can do that, or interrupt if need be, to make sure that you're being recognized. Okay, now we can mute and move on, just so that we can keep background noise to a minimum. And we can move on to the House File 2475. That is a bill from Representative Schultz. And I will move that House File 2475 be re-referred to the committee, the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Division. And Representative Schultz, I see that you also have an author's amendment. Would you like me to move that amendment now?
I would, Chair Halverson, please do so.
Very good. So I will move the A20-0722 amendment. It's an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Is there any discussion to that amendment? We can unmute people. Hearing none and seeing no hands raised, all those in favor of the motion to approve, adopt the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion is adopted. And for background noise, and the bill is in front of us as the author would like. So Representative Schultz, you may proceed with your bill presentation.
Thank you, Chair Halverson and members of the committee. So this is a bill that we reviewed in an information working group a few weeks ago. So I'm going to just try to remind folks what we discussed then, and then feel free to ask questions. And I'm not sure if we have testifiers. I know we have some people from Commerce that are also able to answer questions. But this bill has been moving through the Senate, and it basically provides some protection to older adults from financial exploitation and fraud. In 2018, the legislature passed a similar bill for broker dealers, and that's been working well so far. And it allowed them to freeze a transaction when they suspected fraud to give more protection before their money is gone to others. And since 2013, financial institutions have reported to the federal government over 180,000 suspicious activities targeting older adults involving more than $6 billion. So these activity report filings under elder financial exploitation quadrupled from 2013 to 2017. So the banking industry and credit unions have asked for this legislation to help protect older adults from fraud. So the details of the bill allows financial services providers to delay a transaction if they reasonably believe that it may result in exploitation of people who are 65 years of age or older, or a vulnerable adult. The delay or hold would expire when the bank has a reasonable belief that it won't result in financial exploitation, or 15 days after the attempted transaction, and the hold may be extended. The bank and its employees would be immune from civil, administrative, or criminal liability if acting in good faith. And so it's a bill that will protect, especially right now during the COVID-19 crisis. It's an important bill for a future crisis as well, to protect seniors from fraud. So I urge you to support the bill, and I think we'll have, it's got bipartisan support, so a high probability of getting it enacted this session.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. And we do have a couple of members of the public who have signed up to testify. In the short term, I see that Representative O'Driscoll has raised his hand. Representative O'Driscoll, is this a question for Representative Schultz now, or would you like to hear the testifiers?
Madam Chair, is it going to the General Register after this? I'm sorry if I didn't quite catch where the path was.
Representative O'Driscoll, it's going to go to Judiciary Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Okay. Next up on the testifiers list, we have Tess Rice of the Minnesota Bankers Association. Welcome to the committee. You can introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Tess Rice. I'm general counsel for the Minnesota Bankers Association. We represent about 95% of the banks in Minnesota, from the largest to the very smallest. We appreciate Representative Schultz's work on this bill and the opportunity to comment today. Representative Schultz covered a lot of the details of the bill. I think some of the questions we've heard in other hearings, I'll just bring up some points that legislators found important. One is that freezing a transaction on a customer's account is not something that bankers will take lightly. If you think about it, there's a very real chance that they will lose that customer forever, because it's not going to make them very happy. Customers do have the ability to appeal the freeze on their account. They can do that with the Department of Commerce, and so they do have an avenue to appeal it. But what we really like is the time that we have to delay it, so that we can either talk to the customer, and if that doesn't work, we can refer it to law enforcement, and we can talk to third parties associated with the customer to see if there's some way to discuss it and determine if fraud is actually involved. And if we don't think there is, if that's what the investigation concludes, the hold would be released. So another important point is that this bill is about freezing transactions. It is not about freezing the account. And so
a bank could freeze this particular transaction, but other transactions will continue to go on in the account. So some have been concerned that a senior wouldn't be able to pay their bills, but that's not the case here. It is just for the transaction. We worked with the Bar Association on this and with legal aid on this, and we really appreciate their help crafting something that we think will work for Minnesota. This has passed, similar legislation has passed in at least 9 other states. I think 19 states have some kind of senior fraud legislation like this, but we think it will go a long way to protecting seniors from losing their money. And also that, you know, once this money is gone, it's gone. I mean, it's very difficult to get it back. And so this is a great step in protecting seniors from losing their nest eggs. I appreciate the opportunity to comment, and I'll be here to answer any questions about the bill if you have any.
Thank you for your testimony and for your work on the bill. I don't see any hands raised at this time, but if you can stick around and we can ask questions if more come up. Thank you, Ms. Reyes. Next on the agenda is Jim Amundson of the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota.
Good afternoon, Chair Halverson and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to provide these comments. As you just mentioned, my name is Jim Amundson, and I'm President and CEO of the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota. My colleague, Tess Rice, did a nice job of summarizing the bill. So I'll just say that, you know, even before we knew about COVID-19, the community banks we serve were witnessing a growing and alarming trend of financial fraud targeted at seniors. I could bring you many, many bankers with very similar and very sad stories about very serious financial loss and exploitation. And unfortunately, we believe these situations could only become more common as criminals seek to exploit the financial hardship and emotions that can come from the uncertainty and fear that we now face. So because community bankers live, shop, and worship in the communities they serve, they know their customers very well, and we can be a very effective defense against financial abuse. So we simply say, please help us put a stop to this. We're grateful to Representative Schultz for her work on this bill, and on behalf of our members, I encourage your support. Thank you for this opportunity. I'd be happy to answer any questions as well.
Thank you for your testimony, and again, appreciate your work on this legislation. I'm not seeing any hands raised right now. Members, we can, there's nobody else on the list for public testimony. I will mention that Megan Verdeja and Martin Fleischacker, Megan from the, Ms. Verdeja from the Commerce Department, and Mr. Fleischacker, from, who is the Ombudsman for Senior Fraud from the Commerce Department, are on the phone and are available if questions need to be answered. With that, we can move to discussion on the bill. And Travis, I'm not seeing anybody pop up. Do you have any questions that have come your way?
I have not received anything. Another logistical note, though, Representative Lesh has joined the meeting just for the public information, just so everyone knows.
Thank you for that update, and thank you, and welcome, Representative Lesh. Okay, seeing no calls for discussion on the bill, we can move forward and unmute members so that we can move forward to a vote.
Representative Halverson, would Representative Schultz like to do any closing comments before we vote?
Yes, thank you for that reminder, Travis. Representative Schultz, final words. Sorry about that.
That's okay, Chair Halverson. I just want to thank the members for hearing this bill twice. And there is the fiscal note is completed, and there's no fiscal note. I'll just add that. I know it's not important in this committee. It will be moving forward, but I just want to thank members. And if you have future questions, just contact me. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. I think fiscal notes always end up being important, so I appreciate you making that clarification. One more call for questions, seeing no one raising their hands, seeing no further discussion. I will renew my motion that House File 2475 be re-referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Division, as amended. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those aye. Opposed, say no. The motion prevails, and Representative Schultz, you're on your way to judiciary. Thank you very much for your time today. Next on the agenda, we have Representative Richardson with House File 4240. Representative Richardson, if you'd like to unmute yourself and proceed with your introduction.
Thank you, Chair Halverson. House File 4240 is a consumer protection bill expanding the guarantee association system to ensure that consumers that purchase insurance products are protected in the event of a company failure or insolvency. While insurance company failures are rare, they do happen, and insurance companies are responsible to help pay off the company's claims and protect policyholders through the association. Recent insolvencies in the long-term care industry have exposed significant gaps and risks for consumers and the overall insurance market. Also in Minnesota, because HMOs are exempt from participation in the guarantee association system, in the event of an insolvency, assessments would only be spread over a portion of insurers in the market, which creates another critical gap in consumer protection. In order to ensure adequate protection, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners adopted revisions to its Model Health Insurance Guarantee Association Act to address issues around long-term care and also HMOs, and promoted a solution to broaden the assessment base to create a larger safety net for future insolvencies. In Minnesota, we know that we have an increasingly aging population, and that correlates with increased long-term care needs. Minnesotans that purchase long-term care products to plan for their futures and protect their families and deserve consumer protection. The challenge facing long-term care insurers in our state is that actuarial assumptions made decades ago when long-term care insurance experiences were not fully developed are now proving inaccurate. This is resulting in strain on the financial conditions of long-term care writers and increased uncertainty and fear of insolvencies. I believe that we have Commissioner Kelly and his staff on the phone to walk us through the agency bill.
Richardson, we can, if you would be so kind, you can move your bill, and then I understand you had an author's amendment as well that we can deal with so that it's in front of us as you would like us, and then we can move to Commissioner Kelly. So if you want to move your bill. And...
Sure. Thanks, Chair Halverson. I will move my bill, hoping to move it to the General Register, and wanted to also ensure that we were identifying the DE4 amendment that gets the bill in the shape that I'd like it to be in.
Okay. So Representative Richardson moves House File 4240 be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Richardson moves the DE4 author's amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Is there any discussion to that amendment? We can unmute people. Seeing no hands raised, all those in favor of the adoption of the DE4 amendment, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted, and the bill is in front of us as the author would like. Commissioner Kelly, would you like to address the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Steve Kelly. I am the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Thank you for the opportunity to bring this department bill forward. We appreciate Representative Richardson's work in serving as the author for the bill. I also want to say thank you to the many stakeholders that have worked with the department and for Representative Richardson's patience while we had conversations with those stakeholders to try to achieve consensus on this bill. House File 4240, as Representative Richardson said, brings forward updates
to Minnesota's Guarantee Association Law and reflects the work of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners to forge a compromise to protect policyholders in the event of a long-term care insolvency. Each state has its own guarantee association that exists to protect people that have insurance policies with an insurer that might fail. When an insurer with business on the books in a state fails, other insurers with business in the state are assessed to pay claims up to limits. The limits are established to help ensure the sustainability of the guarantee association system. In the event of an insolvency, the guarantee association covers costs for the failing insurer and can use assessments of the members, member insurers to help pay claims. Under our current law, as Representative Richardson pointed out, if a long-term care insurance company were to go insolvent, companies with health insurance business would be assessed to cover claims. But long-term care insurance is primarily sold by life insurers who would not be assessed under current law, and it is this inequity that the NAIC worked to remedy. And the results of that work are reflected in the changes contained in this bill. The revised Model Act states that instead of 100% of assessments being made by companies with health insurance business, assessments in the event of a long-term care insolvency will be split 50-50 between health insurers and life insurers. Part of the carefully crafted compromise is that in Minnesota, HMOs will be included in the health insurer 50%, and policyholders of an HMO will be covered by the Guarantee Association if an HMO happens to fail. Importantly, the bill also adds HMOs to a list of insurers that can offset assessments through tax offsets currently in Minnesota law. Prior to this year, 27 states have adopted the revisions. Several others are planning on adopting the revisions this year. I ask that members support this bill because it helps ensure all Minnesota residents get their insurance claims paid in the event that a long-term care company becomes insolvent. Thank you, Madam Chair. If you'd like, I can go through the bill section by section if it would be helpful to the committee.
Are there members who would like a bill walkthrough, or have you reviewed the bill? Representative O'Driscoll, I can leave that question to you if you'd like. Well, I'm not hearing or seeing any requests for that, and I appreciate the offer. And I know you'll be here for additional questions if they come up, Commissioner. Appreciate your testimony on the bill and your work on this issue. The next testifier on our list is Fred Anderson, the Chief Life Actuary of the Commerce Department.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have anything to add at this point, but I'm available for questions if there are, especially on the technical side.
Excellent. Very appreciate you being here very much. Additionally, I have Mr. Brickwitty on the list. Mr. Brickwitty, would you like to testify or add anything to the commissioner's comments, or are you here for questions as well?
Madam Chair, questions only as needed.
Okay, very good. Well, you got your A-team here, and folks can ask questions as needed. Members, I don't see anybody else for public testimony on the list, so we may move to member discussion. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the commissioner or to others from Commerce, what is the maximum benefit that would be provided by the Guarantee Association? Is it still the $500,000 that life and health carriers have? And secondly, is there also a limit if someone were to have multiple long-term care policies? How would that work?
Who would like to answer that question?
Madam Chair, I'll take the first part and then maybe refer the second question to Mr. Anderson. But
thank you, Commissioner
Madam
Kelly.
Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, This bill does not affect any of the limits currently in place. It addresses only who pays in to the system. And then with respect to, I don't recall from my review of the existing statute how potentially multiple policies are addressed. And so I'd refer that to Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Anderson.
Okay, thank you. I believe the way it works is that the coverage is per individual, per policy type. So I believe that the limit for long-term care is $500,000 per individual. And so if there was, a husband and wife, each with a policy, that, you know, the coverage between the two of them would be $1 million. But, and it's fairly rare for a person to have multiple long-term care policies. And when that happens, it's typically when the first policy is very small, and then it's recommended that, you know, you don't have enough coverage. And so it would likely be a rare occurrence where a person would have two long-term care policies that would in aggregate be a lot higher than what we typically see with a person with one policy in a normal circumstance.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Representative O'Driscoll, do you have some follow-up?
Madam Chair, nope. Thank you for the members of the Commerce Department. No follow-up at this time.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Additional. I muted myself prematurely. I apologize. Additional member questions or discussion? I don't see any. I try to be quick with that mute button because of the dogs. So. Mr. Reese.
I'm not representative. Representative Dean and Elkins have both joined our meeting.
Thank you for that update, Mr. Reese. I appreciate that. Well, seeing no further discussion, we can move to a vote. Representative Richardson, before we do, would you like to offer any final words on your bill?
Thank you, Chair Halverson. I just want to thank the members and ask for support.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. So Representative Richardson renews her motion that House File 4240 be re-referred to the General Register as amended. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, say no. The motion prevails, and Representative Richardson, you are on your way to the General Register. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
We can remute the mic to bring forward our final bill of the day, House File 356. I want to be sure that my muting is working correctly. This is a bill, a vehicle bill. I am going to move House File 356 be re-referred to the General Register. And I will move adoption of the A20-747 author's amendment. This is to get the correct language in front of us. This bill is a vehicle for us to create some legislation in order to provide protections for the Gambling Control Board and our local charities that are currently unable to operate because of the COVID-19 crisis. So this is a COVID-related bill. So I move the A20-747 amendment. Is there any discussion to that amendment? Seeing no one seeking recognition, all those in favor of adoption of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Now the bill is in the form that the author would like.
I will ask Mr. Getman of the Minnesota Gambling Control Board to describe the situation and the bill. Mr. Getman.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you. Yes, we can hear you, Matt. Oh.
Thank you for your time. This bill is actually meant to protect not the Gambling Control Board as much as it is all of the licensed lawful gambling organizations throughout the state. It is directly impacting those that are directly impacted by the COVID-19. The licensed organizations
Mr. Getman, could I stop you for just a second? Sorry to interrupt, just so that we can clearly understand you. Are you on the speakerphone or the reception is just a little muddled, and so I want to be sure that we can all hear you clearly.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Apologies. Can you hear me better now?
That's much better. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and for your patience as well, and all the representatives. Thank you. I was starting to mention that the purpose of this actual amendment is to be a vehicle for all of the licensed lawful organizations throughout the state that have been affected by the COVID-19 situation. So the six different statutes, other sections, are ones in which there are requirements that because of the executive orders, the actual licensed organizations are unable to comply with. So these statutory changes, these amendments, are there to assist to alleviate the pressure that these organizations are currently facing in order to adhere to the statutes while we are currently dealing with the COVID-19 restrictions. And to go through each of them, the first one is dealing with the actual loans of money that are typically going the opposite direction. So more often than not, the parent organization, let's say the veterans organization, the actual American Legion, would initially loan money to the subordinate gambling organization in order to have funds to buy the gambling equipment to start up their operations. In this particular case, this is after this has been going on for years, the gambling has been the actual revenue producer for the parent organization to then spend the money for lawful purposes. What's happening is the need to now loan the money back from the gambling organization back to the parent organization. The specific veterans and fraternal organizations in this particular section one are called out because those are the ones that historically have been identified uniquely by the legislature in an almost quasi-government role. They've been given the terms of the bricks and mortars. The actual section is meant to keep the doors open of these organizations' facilities that are used for other government purposes. They're available for town hall meetings, they're available for Boys and Girls Clubs meetings, for events that are otherwise not happening because the cities don't have the other bricks and mortar structures available to provide that structure. And so what this is doing, this particular section would allow the loan from the gambling, where the gambling proceeds exist, back to the parent organization in order to keep those doors open. That's section one. That's the one of five different assistance that this amendment is meant to offer. The second one is actually dealing with two different sections, section two and four. It's the star rating system that is meant to be adjusted by sections two and four of this amendment. The star rating system was set up to assist the public, to assist the legislature, to assist everyone publicly to know whether or not the actual monies that are being produced from the gambling activities are actually going towards the lawful purposes intended by setting up the lawful gambling in the first place. So the star rating system had a threshold of 30%, wherein an organization who did not spend 30% of their net receipts on lawful purposes would go into a probationary status. The issue is the star rating system didn't take into account the inability of these organizations to even write checks, let alone have a process without violating executive orders of the stay-at-home order, without the executive order of basically not allowing these organizations to hold their monthly meeting to approve the expenditures, without the ability for folks to actually come to these organizations and request money for the lawful purposes. And what I mean by that are expenditures on a regular basis, which allow the organizations to spend 30% of their net proceeds, are organizations like local sporting clubs, a local hockey association, a local girls or boys club, to be able to spend the money on those 501c3 organizations' expenditures from the 30% of the net of the gambling proceeds. When that actual check can't be written, when the meetings can't be held to approve those expenditures, these organizations are jeopardizing their status of getting the necessary stars to stay out of probation. So the purpose of this amendment is to allow for 1 year the entire star rating system to be waived. So those that are on current probation will stay on probation, but those that would go on probation because they can't otherwise spend the money for the lawful purposes is to not put them on probation this year, but rather have their current status be extended for 1 year. And that's the purpose of sections 2 and 4. Section 3 is meant to go through those organizations that have to actually borrow the money or be on credit with the actual distributors and manufacturers for the gambling equipment. Today, the statute reads that they would be in violation if they go beyond 30 days for payments to the distributors and the manufacturers for the gambling equipment. The predicament that this will create if we don't amend this particular part of the statute would be that organizations would be unable to buy any games to start back up. The situation presented itself when we at the Gambling Control Board prematurely asked for safety purposes and the protection of the money in the games that all of the organizations close their games regardless of whether or not those games had reached any kind of threshold to pay back the funds that the gambling organization spent on having those games in the first place. To say it a different way, the gambling organization will spend hundreds of dollars to buy the actual physical pull tabs or pay for the activity, the gambling activity to occur. The gambling activity would normally pay back those monies within the 30 days to allow for that gambling organization to pay back within that 30 days credit, the manufacturer and distributor of those lawful games. Since we prematurely close these games, there are several organizations that are going to be unable to start back up because they won't have the ability to get any further games on credit. So that's section 3. Section 5 is a little bit more straightforward. Bottom line, like the other exemptions or extensions that have been granted for things like driver's licenses, for medical licenses, for other licenses throughout the state, the licenses for the gambling operation would also be, the request here is to be extended based on the COVID-19 closure that has happened. So the very places that these activities have happened would be closed for until the governor's executive orders are rescinded or the restriction is removed, thereby allowing these organizations to extend by that same amount of time that they are not allowed to actually conduct the very activity that they have a license to do. The next and second to last exemption request is dealing with the permits that are for the non-regular licensed folks. So what this is referring to are the folks that are going to do less than $50,000 worth of gambling, less than 4 days worth of gambling throughout the year. And these organizations that are referred to as exempt organizations do not have a full-time gambling manager. They do not have a full-time staff to deal with the gambling activities. The majority of these roughly 3,000 plus exempt licenses are for once a year activities most often. So an annual event that is based on that organization's culmination of planning and activities and money to generate fundraising for that activity during that once a year or few days throughout the year activities are corresponding with exempt licenses. The issue is those exempt licenses may have unfortunately been targeted for a time when the executive orders would have prohibited them from having their activity. And as you hear in your communities on a regular basis, these activities are just getting plain closed for the year, and they are planning to then just reopen them 365 days later. So this particular section is meant to allow 1 year plus 1 month for these organizations to have that exempt permit fee apply to the next year's events. What we're seeing is for the amount of time and the amount of money, these are not expensive permits. They range from less than $100 to just slightly more than $100. To go through the process of trying to refund, to go through the process of trying to prorate the fee, what we have heard from the stakeholders is the best way is just to have these fees apply to next year. And therefore, what we're asking in this particular section is to have the fee extended for up to the 400 days. The final and the sixth request for an amendment is dealing with Section 7, and that's specifically in statute dealing with the requirement to have those gambling managers that are new to have an extension for the time for them to have their mandatory training be completed. Normally, under current statute, they would have 90 days. We're asking for that additional amount of time to accommodate the executive order that's just plain prohibiting these folks from being able to conduct and complete their required gambling manager training to ensure that they're not only complying with the rules, but understand the process to ensure they're an extension of the Gambling Control Board to monitor the activities and again ensure the integrity of the games, that they are able to do that and get that training, complete the training, pass the training without violating the executive order. We at the Gambler Control Board are looking at setting up a virtual training in June, but those organizations that have already replaced their gambling managers are in the quandary of not being able to complete the gambling manager training within the 90 days. So this is, again, the last extension to actually accommodate the actual licensed organizations with their compliance with the statutes. Madam Chair, representatives, I stand ready to answer any questions, but those are the six items that we are requesting the statutes as they exist today to be amended to accommodate, to alleviate the pressure that the licensed organizations are feeling today because of the COVID-19 restrictions.
Thank you for that walkthrough, Mr. Getman. Members, I don't see any other public testimony, so we can move to member discussion. Is there any discussion to the bill as amended? Representative O'Driscoll. Are we unmuted so Representative O'Driscoll can weigh in? Representative O'Driscoll, I see you have a question.
Representative O'Driscoll, I think you need to unmute yourself on your end. I have attempted to unmute you from my end, but it stays muted. So I don't know if you need to try something else on your end. I've attempted to hit unmute several times. I'm not sure what's going on with his end.
Okay. that's the only question. Oops. That's the only question that I have on the list. Are there other members with questions while we try to resolve the technical connection with Representative O'Driscoll? Not seeing anybody else. Would somebody, Chelsea or Travis, be willing to send Representative O'Driscoll a text and see if we can get his technical issue sorted out or if we can get his question by text? He's having trouble unmuting on his end. Try one more time, Representative O'Driscoll, to unmute on your end. Just waiting for any feedback from staff on if they've been able to connect with him.
We're attempting other solutions, so just hang tight. We'll see what we can figure out.
That sounds good. Thank you, everybody, for your patience while we try to figure this out. I want to be sure that if somebody does have a question, that
Chair,
yes, Ms. Representative O'Driscoll, good to hear you.
Yeah, I don't know what happened, but there are gremlins running around the Zoom room world here. So, very quickly to the testifier, you had mentioned that those organizations that were on probation right now would remain in that status for at least another year. Is there anyone that may have come off of that status prior to the COVID that you would have moved that should not be unfairly labeled with being on probation or other disciplinary action because that time has passed?
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, thank you for that question and more importantly for the opportunity to clarify. On a regular basis, the board removes organizations from the probationary status when they work through the issues. And in fact, we are always extremely reluctant to put them in a probationary status and work with them before even putting them in the probationary status. So there would not be any penalty for any organization that has removed whatever reason for being on probationary status from getting removed just because of the extension or the delay of re-implementing the star rating system.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure that I necessarily got the answer. I just want to make sure that somebody who's shouldn't be on probation, but was on probation, isn't going to be on there for a year if they've in fact cured the deficiency. It just seems to be kind of difficult in the competitive world of this, because eventually these places will open up again, and I don't want consumers or others to think that they're in a status because of the law when they're not actually physically in that status. Do you have a vehicle in which to remove them from that during the within the confines of this bill?
Mr. Getman.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I apologize. To clarify, yes, we will and we do remove every single organization that has cured any of the deficiencies that put them on the probationary status in the first place. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll.
Representative O'Driscoll?
We are good. Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you for the question. Any additional questions or discussion, members? Seeing nobody else ask for recognition, I will renew my motion that House File 356 be, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All opposed, please say no. The motion prevails, and House File 356 will be referred to the General Register. With that, members, that completes our business for the day. Without any objection, we can move to adjournment. So Travis will be sending out another announcement with updated meeting details. We're just finalizing those now. So we will be ready to meet again as a committee when we can finalize a meeting time. With that, members, we are adjourned.